You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday, 28 September. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, we're chatting in Nick Kuntz, volatile markets in the week ahead. Charles Savage from Purple Group as they convert to shares with no value and issue another 800 million authorized shares. Matthew Bronwell, he is from Yoco, to get a sense of how the economy has been doing as we open under level one. The show is proudly sponsored by FMI, a division of Bidvest Life Limited. Make your impact, protect your income first. The views and opinions expressed in this show do not reflect the views and opinions of FMI. Some morning headlines from MoneyWeb. African Rainbow Capital Investments U-turns on rights offer plan. And from CNBC, Canada's pension fund plans to invest a third of funds in emerging markets by 2025. Morning markets, Friday, the US was closing green. We had the S&P up 1.6%, NASDAQ up 2.3%. Asia, again, green, although Sydney, literally a couple of points up, 0.03%. Tokyo up 0.7%. Commodities mixed, gold, $1,864 an ounce. The rand, 1709 against the US dollar. And top 40, we got a call for green opening about 0.9% higher.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Tell you now with Nick Kuntz, he's portfolio manager, Sanlam Private Wealth. Nick, morning, appreciate your time. We've had a couple of weeks of fairly serious volatility in U.S. markets. Obviously, that filters through to the rest of the world. It's 5 weeks away from a U.S. election. Fair to say that looks like the volatility might be here for a bit, or do you think we can roar on higher?
Morning, Simon. No, I think the latter. I think that the volatility is here for a while. As you pointed out in your intro, this has been an extremely volatile period. You know, we had four down weeks in a row on the major U.S. counters. It's been a while since we saw that. I mean, just our all share as well, looking last week down 2%. And if I look at things like the volatility index, which is quite a good indicator of what people expect volatility to be, the VIX is actually, I would say, on the cheaper side, 26.38%, historically down at 20, but recently as high as 30s to 40s. So I'd say it's a little bit on the softer side, and that's reflected, I think, this morning as well, quite a bit of green on the screen and a U.S. market that's indicating a sort of a 10-point higher. So overall, though, I think you're right. I think with the elections coming up and a chock-a-block calendar for the next few weeks, it's going to be very volatile.
Yeah, crazy what we're 5 weeks away from that. 5 weeks and a bit away from the election. Going to be a bit wild out there. We got Capitec results out due Wednesday. They're the big banks. They're sort of out of sync. They've got a February-August period rather than a December-June. Are you positioning yourselves ahead of those results? I mean, we've had the trading update. We know it's going to be fairly ugly. Or is it a stock that you basically, let's wait and see what comes on Wednesday?
I think it's a little bit of a wait and see. I mean, there's a lot of short sellers and the Capitec bashers out there who constantly think this thing needs to fall over. But I'm in the camp that I think the management team are extraordinary. And I think people underestimate their risk controls and how stringent they are compared to the other banks. I think they're very, very conservative and comes with impairments and things like that. And as you said, I don't think they're going to deviate far from their recent guidance. And quite frankly, in this environment and in the space that they play, when the stock is down 35% year to date, I would say that's a relatively outperformance, quite frankly. And I don't think, as I said, I don't think they're going to deviate much. And I'll watch and see. But I think I'd curl on the side, sort of err on the side that this might surprise to the upside.
Might surprise to the upside. And I take your point. I mean, I remember when the Viceroy report came out, and the one thing which you can't criticize Capitec management for is being, you know, anything but overly cautious. They really do take very stringent knives to their bad debts, etc. And it served them in good stead. It helped in 08, 09, and they're going to get some horror numbers now, but well capitalized, incredibly well positioned for when a crisis arrives.
Yeah, and if I can add to that as well, I mean, the investor relations or the ability for this group to get ahead of a story and almost to take control of a story is a lesson for most I have confirmed. So look at the horror stories we had with the Stylos, et cetera. You know, they always seem to scram and to cover up and to catch up to a story where these guys are front and center. They're always on the media, social media, very active. And I think it's a lesson for people. You know, get in front of a story and own it. So I think these guys might surprise a little bit to the upside.
Yeah, I remember when that Viceroy story broke. They had a conference call that afternoon after the close. Mm-hmm. They were completely
very
transparent.
Slick, yeah.
Yep, answered all the questions and allayed all the fears. We've got NASPAS and Process off over 2% on Friday. I was not around. I was taking the long weekend. I mean, was that just normal sort of volatile markets? And I was looking at the 10-cent share price. That didn't seem to have done much on Friday. Is that just the market doing what it does best? And sometimes it picks up the big stocks and sells them.
Yeah, Friday, I mean, yeah, for those who weren't around like yourself, it was a bit of a, it was a strange sort of trading session. It was very weak. And we were caught between a stronger dollar, which had a lot of pressure on the precious metal counters. So like your traditional safe havens in South Africa were under pressure. But even on that stronger dollar, and the weaker rand, the banks didn't sort of come to the fore either. And it just seemed to be a general sogginess to the market. I mean, 18 billion traded on the day on Friday, which is to be expected, I think. I think most guys like yourself and most traders took that long weekend. But it was very much seemed to be just to sell everything. Going into the weekend, long weekend, people didn't know how to position themselves. It's been a few nasty weeks. We were down 2% on the weekend. I just got that feeling. It was almost like someone hit the sell basket. And as you said, it was really nowhere to hide. And hopefully there's a little bit of a direction again this morning.
Yeah, get something going. Quick last question. Fashini confirms the 382 JET stores which they're buying. I suppose this is very much in the price. And, you know, it's just the T's and C's have all been sort of done. I's dotted, T's crossed, and they can move on.
Yeah, and this is, it doesn't excite some people. I think a lot of people sort of put this in the sort of the older economy space, but they seem to be getting the job done. And, it's going to be one of those recovery shares, I think, as South Africa opens up and let's see how they do. But I think it's a benefit for SA Inc. anyway, you know, not to see some jobs go into rescue that business. So I'll take that as a positive this morning.
Yep, we'll take that as a positive. Absolutely. Nick Kuntz, Portfolio Manager, Sanlam Private Wealth. Appreciate your early morning time.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Charles Savage. He is CEO of Purple Group, better known as well for Easy Equities. Disclaimer up front, I hold shares in Purple Group. Charles, morning. Appreciate your time. A sense you put out on Friday morning, which I think in many senses perhaps isn't as big as it blew up, certainly on my Twitter stream, my emails, my DMs, everyone was saying, what's the story here? The first part of it, converting the Purple Capital shares from shares of 1 cent value to nil value shares. I mean, my rudimentary understanding is that this is really a very technical process, and certainly it has no impact whatsoever on share price.
Yeah, how's it, Simon? And thanks for having me on. Yeah, I mean, it has no value or impact on the share price. It's actually an old Companies Act provision. I mean, you used to issue these shares at par value, and because we need to create more authorized share capital, you can't have par value and non-par value shares. So we've got to convert all of the par value shares to non-par value shares in order to create more authorized share capital. And, you know, the story behind the increasing authorized share capital is that there are potential corporate events in our future that may or may not require the issuance of shares. And so it's sort of housekeeping to make sure that should we require to issue the requirement to issue more shares, we've got them authorized.
Yeah, I mean, that's an important distinction. And quickly run down that rabbit hole. Authorized shares, you've got 1.2 billion. That's how many shares Purple can issue out. But there are only 982 million in the market. And I'm rounding up the numbers here, which leaves about 220 odd million essentially sitting, for want of a phrase, those sit in the Purple Capital safe or Purple Group safe to be issued, for example, staff and share incentives, etc. And you just need to push that number higher for potential future requirements.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, we've got roughly about 150 million share options outstanding for staff scheme, employee option scheme. And those have got varying expiry periods, and so they would be exercised at varying times over the next, it's actually a 5-year vesting scheme with a 7-year horizon.
Mm-hmm.
So those could happen at any point. And then there is a transaction that will happen about a year out. In fact, the option expires in August 2021, which was a BE transaction, which was a debt instrument, which we had the ability to convert to shares through an option. And that will require roughly about 138 million shares. So if you add just those two events up, the 150 million outstanding share options and the 138 million potential conversion from a BE debt structure, then you already realize that we don't have enough shares, because that's roughly like close to 290 million shares. And as you summarized, we don't have that many authorized shares. So really it's just housekeeping to make sure that we've got the requisite authorized share capital should we require it.
Yeah, and then the last one, and I think this caught certainly a lot of people, were like, what's the Sanlam put option? Sanlam took an investment in Easy Equities, a group structure, and part of that's a put option, where in the simplest language, Sanlam can unwind it. They can come back to you and say, look, here's your shares back. Please give us the money back. And so you raise a provision for that. And again, this is just really a housekeeping. And I'll say it because I don't know if you're able to. I can't imagine Sanlam's going to exercise their put option, but you need to provision for that.
Yeah, exactly, Simon. And yeah, well summarized. It's, you know, I can't say either what Sanlam will do because I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, what they did is they put 100 million rand in, and they got 30% into Easy Equities, and they got 30% in return. What they did to protect that investment is they said, if 3 years out we don't believe that it was a worthy investment, then there were two options available to them. When I say worthy, that the valuation process for Easy Equities unfairly prejudiced them.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can imagine valuing a startup that Easy Equities 3 years ago would have been a difficult process. So they had two options available to them. They can give the shares back to us, in which case we have to pay them the 100 million plus interest back, which would roughly be about 120 million rand. Which, on my side of the fence, if they gave me that option to buy back those shares of 100 million, I would take it, you know, given what Easy Equities has done over the last few years. And then the second option was that should we not have the money, because they wouldn't want to bankrupt the company, but should we not have the money available to pay back that debt, then they got an extra 10% in Easy Equities for free, which essentially meant that they bought at a lower valuation. So it's really a protection mechanism for them. And I think you're right on the money. I mean, I think that anybody who bought into Easy Equities 3 years ago is pretty happy with their investment.
Just quick last question. When does that Sanlam put option expire?
So it matures on the 17th of November, and then it has a six-month expiry period. So they have the right as it's 6 months after the 17th of November.
We'll leave that there. That's Charles Savage, CEO, Purple Group. Lots of T's and C's, lots of complexity here, but in essence, just sort of getting a share structure into a more sort of required space where it needs to be. Charles, appreciate your early morning. When you protect your monthly income against the risk of injury, illness, and death, you protect your future and the impact you make on those around you. FMI has been protecting South Africans' income for over 25 years, constantly innovating to provide greater claim certainty and cover for more occupations than ever before. Make your impact, protect your income first. FMI, life done better. FMI, a division of Bidvest Life, is a licensed life insurer and authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Joining now with Matt Bronow. He's head of brand and marketing at Yoco. Matt, morning. Appreciate your time. We chatted 3 months ago, just as we were sort of coming out of hard lockdown. And I thought, let's get a catch-up. You're doing a small business turnover index. Your devices which are out there in the small mom-and-pop businesses, etc., getting a sense of economic activity on the ground. This is not the sort of checkers and macros. These are the smaller companies. What have we seen? I mean, certainly recovery has been coming. Economic activity has been returning in these smaller SME businesses.
Morning, Simon. Yeah, it's been a very positive story. I think when we last checked in, we were sitting at SME turnover levels of around 60% versus a pre-COVID baseline.
Mm-hmm.
Taken, which was the first 2 weeks of March. That number has now increased up to, it ranges between 85 and 95% now. So we are not far off a full recovery, within this very micro segment of the marketplace. It's not completely equal across the industries and geographies, but generally across the board. And actually what we have seen as well over the weekend, since we moved into level one, was really solid weekend trading. I mean, back to 100% on Saturday. So the numbers are looking very positive, actually.
And this really helps us. I mean, I remember when we moved to level one, a lot of the economists were saying, you know, basically 95% of the economy is now open. And your data is essentially confirming that and saying, yeah, it's about 95%. As you say, you know, retail doing a bit better, perhaps in health and beauty, hospitality, well, the weekend might have changed that. But we're at that very, very almost, and perhaps on the weekends we're back sort of as per normal, just wearing our masks, but out there and shopping.
Yeah, it appears to be so. I mean, I think the one exception to this is where there's heavy tourism reliance. So you can still see that the Western Cape is quite significantly behind the curve. Mm-hmm. I mean, Western Cape is sitting at about 75, 76 at the moment, and even I was looking over the weekend, not a significantly improved performance against that number. So where there's heavy tourism, there is, you know, that recovery is going to take quite a lot longer. I mean, it's 20% back, really.
Yeah, and that does make sense, particularly Western Cape. A lot of that will also be foreign tourists flying in. And at this point, you know, our borders are only opening later this week. Have you seen over the course of the lockdown? I mean, certainly I imagine some of your customers simply didn't survive the period and have gone out of business. On the flip side, has there been perhaps increased demand, people taking their side hustles more seriously and demand for your devices and therefore uptick in new customers?
Yeah, you know, interestingly, we all the way through lockdown, even at level five, we didn't see bad demand from a new customer acquisition perspective. You know, our numbers were solid all the way through, and that was something that really surprised us from day one. Anecdotally, and having spoken to a lot of customers throughout the course of the last few months, what has happened is that a lot of people have started side hustles. They've been forced to, due to retrenchments or due to, you know, existing income just decreasing. And there's been a lot of fragmentation as well. You know, I'll give you an example. In the health and beauty space, a lot of salons have closed, but individual hairdressers have now splintered off and started their own businesses. So when it comes to a device such as ours, which is a card machine device, suddenly each of those individual hairdressers are needing their own device because it is just a little business that started because the salon itself is now effectively renting a seat out. Mm-hmm. That's just one example of multiple across various industries that have happened out there. So we have seen very consistent demand all the way through, and that is now quite substantially increasing in the month of September. So that side is looking solid as well. I have to say the other thing that is definitely impacting the numbers is significant cash displacement that's happening out there.
Yeah, that was my next question.
Exactly. So a lot of small businesses they're just ditching notes and coins, and customers are demanding that. And therefore, a lot of people are moving to digital payments, and that's influencing numbers increasingly what we're seeing.
Yeah, and I suppose it's a cashless trend. And I mean, you know, we've seen it in the US. I suppose your equivalents there would be sort of Square to a degree, PayPal. They've been, you know, it's been ticking along. The pandemic's done some weird things and it's accelerated some. We've heard Microsoft talk around their Teams and the like, where that, you know, and Zoom, for example. Cashless is going to be one of the sort of the big outtakes from the pandemic, where it's a case of no more notes, no more coins. Let's just go card. It's simpler, it's safer, and frankly, in a pandemic, it's healthier.
Yeah, exactly. And we did a survey about a month or two ago, and we asked our customer base how many of them actually were completely cashless, so they only accepted digital payments. And that number stood at about 8 out of every 100, so about 8%. That number jumped to 32% in the last 2 months. So that's a fourfold increase. And of those people that have gone cashless, 65% of them said they would remain cashless post the pandemic because they've seen the advantage of it now. So it's a seismic shift that's actually happened from a cashless perspective.
Yeah, I know. I've always been a fan of cash, but I know in the pandemic I've been using a lot less cash, just, you know, even at places where I would normally have used cash. Now you do electronic payment. Life is simple like that. Matt Bruno, he is head of brand and marketing at Yoko. Really appreciate your time this morning. That's it for today. You'll find us live every weekday morning, 6:30 a.m. on the MoneyWeb website or app. Podcast available from 7 a.m. The show proudly sponsored by FMI, Division of Bidvest Life Limited. Make your impact, protect your income first. The views and opinions expressed in this show do not reflect the views and opinions of FMI. Massive thanks to my team, Eddie and Cordora, to you for listening, my guests for the early morning contribution. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.